Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome to part two of the review. And we're recording these intros after the episode, as we said before, and I sound like I have a cold, so this is going to be seamless. Yeah, I'm a little bit stuffed up right now. And then it miraculously goes away right after this intro.
Yeah, well, if you hadn't said anything, maybe people would just assume you had taken, like, super powerful cold meds. Or not. I was waiting for those jazz snaps.
No, I was just thinking that could be insulting. It's like, yeah, and he must have taken cold medicine because he just got boring. Yeah. So as we said at the end of part one, we'll be picking this up with conditions.
Right, and then we'll move on into the God Machine Chronicles part, I guess.
Or setting part.
Oh, that worked much better.
Yeah. All right, well, take it away, Pasla. And we rush through the merit system just so we can get to conditions.
Yeah.
Which we mentioned before, and Wayne was dying too.
Yeah.
There's probably a few points that we've left on the cutting room floor of Wayne introducing conditions before it was supposed to come on.
Yeah, probably.
So tell us about conditions, Wayne.
So conditions are, they've essentially replaced flaws from the New World of Darkness system, where conditions are something that can apply to your character that has both, maybe not all the time, but usually has a mechanical and a narrative effect. And these could be things like addicted, disabled, deprived, guilty, informed. Not all of them are negative. I'm looking at one that's called inspired right now. And as we said for beats, all of them have a resolution. And when you resolve the condition, you take a beat. So again, it's kind of a way to codify, or at least reward, role-playing. So just like as an example, the condition amnesia. It's a persistent condition, which obviously means it doesn't go away. And the resolution says you regain your memory and learn the truth. Depending on the circumstances, this may constitute a breaking point. And then there's a section that says beat. Something problematic arises, such as a forgotten arrest warrant or old enemy. So what that means is you can take a beat by either, I believe it's either you or the GM, introducing this problem that has arisen from your lack of memory. So it's essentially a way to earn experience points through role-playing. And if you want to get rid of it, well, then you take that resolution, which you have to do kind of in the fiction of the game rather than doing something mechanical.
So you're blind. Your resolution is your character regains her sight.
Unlikely to happen.
Yeah, it's like, oh, if only that was easy. Why are these blind? Why blindness is a choice?
Apparently so. There isn't one that says one arm, but if there was, it would probably say regain your arm.
Yeah.
But I think blind is a good example because it has a mechanical penalty attached to it where it says, you know, you're going to fail tasks that require sight unless another sense can be replaced, in which case you're going to make the roll as normal, but with that a -3 penalty. So some of them have a mechanical effect, some of them don't, but they all kind of give you something to earn XP with.
And blind is also a good example because they talk about, like, when a condition is going to affect you in combat, then it becomes a tilt. Because then you're like, oh, blindness in combat. Like, how's that going to work?
Oh, I can't stand up straight. Oh, tilt.
Yeah, -3. So then you look at the blinded tilt to see what the drawbacks of being blind in a combat situation.
So again, this isn't bad. And I see how, yeah, okay, you know, failing an integrity role can apply certain conditions, and yeah, that'll make your character less effective, but also give you more role-playing opportunities. So I really do like the way those are woven together. But just like aspirations and virtue and vice, there are quite a number of conditions. I didn't count them all, but there's more than I can remember offhand. And they all do something different, and they all have a different resolution, and they all have a different way to earn a beat, which is to be expected, but as we keep saying, it's just more for both the GM and the player to remember.
Okay, with a read-through, I don't know how much this is going to affect the game. Because when I look at these conditions, they're all really good, and it's nice that they have the rules for these. Because you're like, okay, something makes you blind, and yeah, I can see that coming up in games like these, or you're shaken. And it's nice to have this added on, and to have something where there's conditions and there's tilts, because it you know, separates the game the way it likes to be separated, social and physical.
Right.
So I like that a lot. And as opposed to, you know, when I talk about aspirations, or I talked about the unlimited pool for virtues and vices, which I say is difficult to track, I think maybe these would stand out in your mind a little bit more. That said, I do know one of Chris's big critiques of 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons
right.
was the conditions. And when you and this is one of the problems with doing a review like this, is because you look at something and on paper, it looks fine to me. And when we looked at 4E, having those different conditions, because you look at those and you say, yeah, that's makes sense. Your character would be dazed in a situation like that.
Yeah.
But then when as the conditions pile up within a combat, he found it very, very hard to track. And
right.
And adding that players then also have conditions on them. And he found that hard to track. So I think this is something that I'm going to have to reserve judgment. I like it's here. I like that it's here. I think you could not use it if it becomes too much. Or you can definitely pare down this list to the ones that you think are worth remembering. Like
well,
when you fail in integrity, it's saying choose from these three things.
Right, right.
So if you want to keep the integrity of the integrity rules,
hey.
you can stick to those conditions that are specifically referenced there.
Right.
And that's well, that's like Broken Madness and four others.
Well, you bring that up made me think of a couple things. Is yeah, on the one hand, having these conditions is really smart because the system now can create new conditions that will apply from like a supernatural attack, right?
That's
like,
the point.
Who knows what conditions we're going to see in the Strix Chronicles? Maybe there'll be you know new ones, and then another one for the werewolf. So I do like how they've left themselves open to having all these kind of cool effects. I was thinking of Chris, too, when you brought up that it could become unwieldy in play. He just beat me to it. And
Chris, by the way, is blind. That's why we consistently think of him.
But we got a review copy of God Machine Chronicle condition cards. And we got... I didn't look at it because I said, oh, this is just another... Not another way to make money, but it's another kind of, you know, additional thing that I don't really need to run the game. Said that before I started reading God Machine Chronicles.
Really? After playing Pathfinder? You don't see cards as being beneficial?
Well, but see, this is before I started reading God Machine Chronicles and realized how different certain things are now. Because you think of New World of Darkness, you don't really need to track conditions at all because it didn't exist. So I, you know, passed on the cards. Having read God of Machine Chronicles now, I understand why they are present.
Yep.
And I would if we were going to play, I would want to use them just for being able to reference them really quick and having this little card that says, great, you are, you know, guilty, and here's what it does, and here's
that's
how you
really
get rid
point.
Of it.
I'd like to see the storyteller's screen for
yes.
this game, because you might need just cards instead of, and just flip over the ones that you need to that are currently in play
right.
and keep track of it that way, because I think a screen might not be that,
all that.
Helpful. Although there are certain pages in this book, as in the New World of Darkness, a summary of combat on one page, which is excellent. And the update has a summary page as well, and it's very, very, very helpful.
Right.
But like these conditions, that you might need cards, but easy enough to make yourself if you don't want to buy them.
That's true.
Yeah. So now we move on to the story part of the rules, and that's the social interaction and the combat rules. Now, with the dice pool, there's pretty simple resolution. You add an attribute with a skill. Generally, some other things can add to this dice pool. You make a roll for the target number, which is 7, and those would be considered successes. And usually you have the one-off roll. You either succeed or don't succeed, and you can have dramatic failure and exceptional success. But in New World of Darkness, they also had extended actions, and the World of Darkness update also has extended actions. In fact, they replaced the rules.
I think it's not that big of a change. It's kind of a minor change where, like, now on a failed roll, which is, means you don't roll enough successes to meet the target number, you have two choices. Either you stop doing the extended action, or you take a condition. So again, it's not a big change, but it's another way of how they did a really good job of integrating all the new choices into the system.
Right.
Something that wasn't all that minor was what they did to social interaction.
This comes from Danse Macabre, which was is a highly recommended Vampire the Requiem book, and it introduced something that Wayne likes to call social combat.
Yep. And based on the character I played in our vampire game, I was very interested to see what they did to social combat and social interaction.
Right. So you can obviously imagine how Wayne interacts with people that he calls it social combat.
Right. And you can also imagine that I probably lose quite often.
No. Yeah. But World of Darkness update calls it social maneuvering.
They introduce not a lot of new terms, but several.
They introduce a significant new one in a thing called doors.
Hmm.
Yeah. Doors as it relates to this, of course.
Right. Not the musical group. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, doors are kind of a way to represent a numerical way to represent how difficult it is to manipulate someone into doing what you want, because that's what social maneuvering is, whether it's conning someone or seducing someone or intimidating someone. The target has a certain amount of resistance, and in the World of Darkness update, those are called doors, and you have to get through a number of doors, which varies based on the target and the situation, before the target does what you want them to do. That's fine. I see it making perfect sense. The system in New World of Darkness was a series of extended and contested actions. But I do kind of, I do like doors because the actions do not always have to be contested. The target might not actually know you're conning them, and so the con artist is just making, you know, rolls or just taking actions that don't require rolls to get past these doors and eventually kind of wear down the target. So I think it's interesting and it's cool. It did get a little confusing because there is not difficult, but there's math involved. Which, that sounded really bad. Hey, that was an artist, but...
Math is hard.
Yep, math is hard. I was thinking that. There is math involved as to how many doors the target has that you have to get through. And that was a little bit difficult to understand. There's also calculations involved into how many, or what time frame the attacker, for lack of a better term, can open a door. It could go from, a turn to an hour to a day to a week, depending on
the impressions. Weekly rolls.
Right. And again, aspirations and virtues and vices affects these rolls and how many doors the target has. So similar to the conditions, I think this is something I would really have to see in play before I could give a response, either positive or negative, either way. I'm currently neutral.
I think this is positive for people that want it. It gives some people want a lot of rules and things spelled out for them, and I think this does that. And what it also does is it incorporates some of the new things, such as the aspiration.
Like, right.
If accomplishing the goal would prevent the character from resolving an aspiration, add a door.
Right.
Right. And they have things like impressions and. You can have a good impression or a bad impression or an average impression. What does it do to the situation mechanically? And it gives you something to work with. I also think it's very easy to take out because, as Wayne said, the math of, you know, how many doors there are. I mean, that could be, I hesitate to say intimidating, but maybe right. Annoying for some people. But you don't have to do it because there's already enough in the World of Darkness system that you can make that one roll or a couple rolls and fudge the rest.
Right.
Or role play the rest. So I think it's good to have this. And if the number of doors in calculating that does get in the way of the role playing, then it's easy to just take out entirely. Or you can keep sections of it. Like, you can take the first impressions and you use the time between the rolls.
Right.
So you do the first thing and it fails and come back in a week.
Right.
Or whatever. It's like when you want to do something. So even if you don't use the impression rules, the fact that they've written it down might then spark that idea in somebody. So.
No, that's absolutely right. And you saying that helped me kind of clarify my idea. It's not that the math is difficult or annoying. It's just that while they have provided guidelines, the guidelines are somewhat nebulous, personally for my tastes. And reading this, it was kind of difficult for me to get a baseline of kind of what should happen in average circumstances. And lacking that baseline, all these options, I kind of don't know which one to pick. I don't know how many doors someone should have or what kind of time frame would be going on, just because I don't kind of have that baseline to start from.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, they have a rule called soft leverage, gift and bribes. And they say it can be represented by resources or a retainer or things like that. And they help you with your impression. So, yeah, I think. Overall, I'm positive, even though not a critique, but when people talk about how narrative systems encourage role-playing, I don't necessarily agree with that. What I think is what they do is provide more rules for role-playing.
Right.
And that can be good and bad. If you need the rules, then that's great. And sometimes rules can bring something to the surface that, or make you do something that you wouldn't do otherwise. Like going back to the breaking points, asking those 5 questions. And it's like, this is really important for the game that your character thinks of these kind of things. And answering those questions is going to get your character into the correct mindset. Soft leverage and bribes, having rules to determine the time between the rolls, like 1 turn, 1 hour, 1 day, 1 week, hostile reaction, cannot roll. That's great in the sense that it's like, think about leverage. Think about all those games that you do play where you just walk up and it goes, okay, I'm gonna make my
intimidation check.
Yeah, okay. Intimidation or something like that, but they don't set it up at all,
right,
to try to think, because maybe the game master is only going to give them a +1 to the roll, and you're, and all it is like, do you succeed or fail? And if you fail, you're like, okay, I'm gonna keep them tied to the chair for
right,
and then do it again.
Did I mention I was making that intimidation roll with my sword, and that was actually a to-hit check?
Right. No. So, but in most situations, you're not going to have that, let me say, that hard leverage, so it's good to have this. And I like the fact that they're trying to weave in all of these rules together, and it gives it a justification for having the rules. Overall, I'm pretty positive on this. I suppose the initial math might be a bit annoying, and then tracking that, because resolving an aspiration, and you're just like, is that right. Gonna okay, I achieve that goal or achieve that aspiration, okay,
right,
or that's gonna prevent that, and you're like, okay,
yeah, there's just kind of a lot of, there's the potential for a lot of moving parts there, as you said, Lyle. Yeah. It's like, well, this will block the aspiration, but it's affecting the target's willpower in a positive way, it's not so much you have to calculate it, because it's not necessarily math and numbers. It's just you have to take all these things kind of into account, which seems a bit daunting first, or does require a lot of tracking, as you said. So.
I was going to say a rules lawyer could really ruin this, but I think a rules lawyer ruins any game. So.
Well, absolutely. There you go.
It's nothing, no weakness in this game.
Yeah.
Because I think there has to be that trust between the storyteller and the players, and that if something is missed, it's not that you're trying to screw the person over.
It's
just because, hey, you know, there's a lot of doors.
Yeah.
And you do say that it is a bit nebulous about what is the impression. And they have a sentence like, this may mean meeting in a pleasant environment, wearing appealing clothing.
Right.
Appropriate music. Yeah, that is pretty open. But I think in this case, I'm pretty forgiving, because I think it's kind of common sense. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that you want to seduce somebody in real life? How do you go about doing that?
Right. Yeah. No, I think this is kind of similar to like the Apocalypse World things, where the rules could be summed up in the idea of, be a fan of your player characters.
Yeah.
So,
and one thing about this, they do say this is better for player control characters on storyteller characters,
right,
rather than other players' characters. And that's what it's designed to. And that's why the doors is a very narrative or story style of rule, as opposed to, as you were talking about earlier, Wayne, about contested roles, like one versus the other.
Right.
So I don't think it prevents you from doing the player versus player interaction.
No,
but probably it sounds like they're recommending don't use the doors.
They might be, but there's a section that says what to do if it is player versus player. And when the person who initiated the combat gets through all the doors, the player can either, you know, agree to whatever goals were stated, or they can offer an alternative or impose a condition on his own character, which I guess it makes sense because, you know, there are certain things that no matter how good at persuasion you are, there are certain things people just will not do. And so the rules are not forcing a player character to do something that the player feels they would not do.
So they gnaw your arm off to get out of the situation.
Right. Well, it is a cop-out in a sense, being able to offer an alternative. But I think this is something that could be done during the goals section, where it's like you're the two players right there. When one player says, my goal is to make your character do X, it's kind of, I feel, up to the other player to say, sorry, there's no way in hell that my character would ever do that, no matter what your persuasion is. And then there could be a bit of a back and forth there, and you'd come to a compromise about what player's character would do. And so maybe it's the same thing. I would just probably put that step at the beginning rather than the end. It seems a bit like a weasel move to go through opening all these doors and then for the player character target to have the ability to say, and I'm going to give you this thing instead that isn't what you asked for but is kind of similar. So I don't know. But maybe that gets into the rules lawyer thing you said where, you know, someone trying to weasel out of whatever was agreed upon is kind of going to ruin the game anyway.
Well, I mean, forcing somebody to do something they don't want to do is never, especially when it's another player, like people really don't respond well to that. I think you just got to be careful, though, because you're like, I'd rather be blind than do that. And hey, it's a condition, you're blind. Then.
So my options are sleep with you and, oh God, I'm suddenly blind. Can I impose that condition on myself? No.
Yeah. So they discourage you from doing it, but if you want to do it, then here you go.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I hadn't looked at it that way. Yeah. You could just ignore that section. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think you make a good point of perhaps it could be at the beginning or the end to save yourself some time, but then, I don't know, then a lot of people might opt for some negotiation, so it's almost metagaming.
It is.
So you'd be like, okay, it doesn't matter if you knock down all those doors.
But Before or after, through
the role-playing, I mean, I know you're making roles and knocking down doors, but through the actual role-playing, you can actually make your character. And it sounds like we're just defaulting constantly to seduction.
Hmm.
But winning somebody over. But you can actually do things that win the person over. I mean, a lot of great stories are, and not so great stories.
A lot of stories, full stop.
Yeah, a lot of stories where, you know, they don't like each other. And then they find that person's the one for them.
Hey, there's a thin line between love and hate.
Or buddy cop movies. It's like, you know. Two polar opposites who find out that they're, you know, I mean, you could be breaking down that door. You imagine Eddie Murphy's character in 48 Hours, and he needs this guy to help him get his money, so he breaks down doors to get the cop to do that.
Oh, literal doors, yeah. Or I was thinking, you say, well, you go from buddy cop movie to something like Brokeback Mountain. Yeah, get through those doors.
Closet doors. I guess.
I wasn't even thinking closet, but anyway.
They're not even in the closet. They're in the tent.
Yeah, no doors there. Yeah. Just how many zippers do you have to get through?
Right? Yeah. Have you ever seen Brokeback Mountain?
Actually, I haven't, no.
That's actually really good.
Yeah.
It's a very good story. You should watch it.
I've watched 300 enough to
cover it. Yeah, it's the same movie.
I know.
Except there's two. It's the prequel to 300. It's called
Man,
two.
That's going to be a real short fight.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Gave you a segue. Speaking of fight, next section is combat.
Right. And of course, the segue was 300, not Brokeback Mountain. So, although they do fight in Brokeback Mountain.
Oh, right.
That's a good movie. It's a good movie.
All right. Can we move on to combat?
All right.
So one of the things they introduce here in New World of Darkness update is a way to resolve combat with a single roll. Which I think is pretty cool because sometimes you don't want to spend a lot of time on the details of the fight. You just kind of want to flash forward and get to the end. But having said that, I think you could have done that using the regular system anyway.
Yeah.
So this is, sorry, and again, not to steal what you're going to say, Lyle, but this is something you could lift and just drop into the New World of Darkness system.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this, and whereas New World of Darkness I thought was a significant improvement over Old World of Darkness in terms of combat. And it's one of the reasons why I really like the system. And this is almost the same, but right. but it has changed some things. And if this had been New World of Darkness, I'd be happy with it.
Right.
And if the other one came out, I probably would have the same feelings where, oh, this is great, or I could do this. But it's kind of the same to me, except they do make a point that they like to provide a lethal focus to fighting. And people who are unfamiliar with New World of Darkness, you can have different types of damage. Bashing damage, lethal damage, and aggravated damage. Lethal damage as well.
Cuts and gunshots.
And then bashing was, like with a baseball bat. And they do make a good point. You can kill somebody with a baseball bat.
Well, I thought it was really cool how the if your entire health meter fills up with bashing damage and someone keeps punching you, it starts converting over to lethal damage, representing the fact that, as you just said, you can kill someone with a baseball bat, or you can beat someone to death with your fists. And I like the way the game simulated that.
That's New World of Darkness, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, but in a World of Darkness update, what they like to say is weapons do lethal damage.
Right, okay.
And they don't want to make the distinction. And, of course, you know, we're living in the concussion era, or, like, people are more aware of the problems that can come through concussions and things like that. I mean, you're talking... And they make a reference to it. There was a time when police officers would carry around saps and knock people out. And now you're like, yeah, no one's going to do that. And they would rather electrocute you with a taser than hit you over the head, because that can be more lethal than stabbing a person.
Right.
So they, again, this is a good example of where they make a nice case for why they're going with this rule change. So they say, okay, it's these weapons all do lethal damage. And you're like, okay, I get it. That makes sense. It's not like when I was looking at New World of Darkness, I said, you know what this needs? For baseball bats to deliver lethal damage. But when you do that, and you're like, okay, I accept that, and I'm fine, and I can go with that. So I can buy into it. So I think it's pretty good, the combat system.
Yeah.
I do have you, like you're saying, Wayne, I do have a sense, did I need this? Not necessarily. Like, you could look at a combat summary chart, and it looks really similar.
It does.
To New World of Darkness. Because some of the stuff that comes up, and they come from, like, good sources, like Armory and other things like that. And that was an excellent source book. You know, it comes up when you look at the weapons. And in fact, they say, like, when you make a roll in New World of Darkness, you would roll, let's say, your dexterity plus firearms to see if you hit somebody. In New World of Darkness, you would add like this firearm damage to that roll to see if you hit, and that carried over into damage.
Right.
Now, what they're saying is, don't do that. Don't add in the weapon modifier to see if you hit. What you do is, if you do hit, add the weapon damage modifier to that, and those count as successes. So what they say is, okay, what you need to do now then is, if you're looking at old books, just, you can still use those stats, just subtract one from the damage modifier, because they factored in that would be used in determining the hit. But right. Since you're already going to have an automatic hit through succeeding, then the new damage ratings, I'd factor that in. So to me, it's 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other. But yeah, I can buy into this. Yeah.
Well, one of the other things they introduced was an optional rule in the New World of Darkness update, which is called Beaten Down and Surrender. And what that is, when a character takes a certain amount of bashing damage, or they suffer any amount of lethal damage, they essentially have the fight knocked out of them, as they say, and the person or the character can kind of choose to take themselves out of the fight rather than continue the combat. And that seemed, again, rather Fate-esque to me, where you can concede a conflict and oftentimes save yourself from dying or serious harm, whether social or mental, in Fate, and still be alive, or you can continue the fight and kind of risk dying. And that's another rule they've introduced in New World of Darkness update, which, okay, again, they mark it as an optional rule, and I could see it being used in certain types of games or in certain situations, but just kind of like you said, Lyle, it's 6 to 1, half dozen the other. I necessarily didn't need it, but it is interesting.
I'm going to disagree a little bit, because I actually think this is... I actually like this.
Okay.
You were talking about it earlier in the day, and I had another look at it, and unlike what I just said about the sort of damage resolution, and I'm not a systems person, so right. much. So I don't, when I look at the system, it's more about how it feels to me as opposed to calculating probabilities.
Right.
So, but when I look at this, what I liked about this is that, again, it incorporates something that they've introduced that's new, tilts. With tilts, you think of those as the combat conditions. And it's exactly like Wayne says, and just if you want to take a violent action after you've taken on this beaten down tilt. So if you want to take a violent action until the end of the fight, you must spend a point of willpower. And for people unfamiliar with World of Darkness, willpower, I mean, imagine a rating for willpower, but unlike something like wisdom in D&D, it is something that decreases as you expend your willpower. So like a high willpower just means you get like more points, but also get in which to do things, and they're very, very valuable. So spending a point of willpower, and somebody might have 6 or 7, maybe right. 5, so it's not like you have a lot of these, that's a pretty significant thing. And I really like it because it, you know, because people do get beaten down. And that's hard. I think that's hard to replicate in a game, just like fear is hard to replicate in a game.
Right.
The person's like, okay, you're afraid now. Okay, I'm scared. I guess, but I'm sitting at a table in broad daylight. And
yeah, I am with scared. My friends around me. And yeah. Hey, pass me that beer.
Yeah. And you just like you take the beaten down tilt. You have that sense of relief, really. Like, whew, all right. Okay, now does he turn his back? Okay, I'll shoot him in the back. But this kind of thing, it's like, no, you're beaten down. And I think spending that point of willpower kind of reinforces that. So I think this is a case where the rules accentuate role playing as opposed to get in the way of role playing.
Right.
So, yeah, I like that.
I could see that, yeah.
Yeah. So armor is another change. It no longer adds to the defense.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So with New World of Darkness, the defense is subtracted from your roll, from the attacking roll. But here, you're not going to add armor. What it does is you have ballistic armor, which downgrades 1 point of damage from lethal to bashing.
Wow, okay.
And general armor applies to all attacks, and each point of general armor reduces the total damage taken by 1 point.
Gotcha, okay.
Yeah.
I guess it does make sense. It's kind of like, especially if you look at like armor class in like D&D, you're like, I don't understand how wearing plate mail prevents me from getting hit. And, you know, and then you kind of get into the discussion of, well, it's actually like an abstraction of whether you got hit or not. And, yeah, you're like, but it's called a to-hit roll, so... No, I see this as, okay, yeah, defense prevents you from getting hit, while armor absorbs damage or downgrades damage from a successful hit. So, yeah, I like that change.
Yeah.
It's kind of not thematically appropriate, but maybe a bit more simulationist, I guess, depending on how you look at it.
Mm-hmm. And there's a handy reference sheet for tilts, including environmental tilts, such as ice.
Yeah, some of the tilts were a little bit weird.
Which one?
Well, just the fact that there are environmental tilts. Like, not that having environmental tilts is weird, but again, it's like, are there really that many modifiers you can apply to dice rolls that warrant this many of tilts?
I don't know. Heavy rain seems pretty thematic. Extreme cold, extreme heat. People like those type of rolls.
They do. Earthquake. They do.
I don't know about that one. Because it's penalty to dexterity rolls depending on severity. But having been through some moderately severe earthquakes, they don't last long enough. I guess it would have to be a natural disaster. Like
I'm sure that's
on
what
an
it
epic
is.
Scale. But it'd be like having volcano as an environmental tilt. I mean, I guess, but are you really going to be there? Or lightning strike? I mean, yeah, you get struck by lightning, but is that going to last that long? Probably be dead.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a tilt. No, just kidding.
Well, could be. What's the condition? You return to life. All right, I'm not going to resolve that.
Look at that. They have knocked down as a personal tilt. Knocked up. Wow, that's unusual. No, kidding.
Oh, all right. I was about to say, really? Like, in combat? How did that happen? That's a bit weird.
Okay, I'll take the condition pregnant. Which is not a condition in this game.
All right, just to be clear.
All right. Yeah.
Sick. Sick is a personal tilt. I just saw that.
Yeah, that makes sense. You're sick.
Yeah, and again, I guess it is from more like a supernatural or kind of, you know.
Or you're sick.
Weaponized thing. Or you're sick. Hold on, guys, I can't fight. Oh,
has to be weaponized flu. It can't be the regular flu.
Shouldn't have eaten that sushi. Oh.
Wayne never calls him sick. Yeah. And to wrap up, and I know you really want to talk about this, they talked about ghosts and they really add to it.
Well, I did think it was kind of a nice mirror of the New World of Darkness book, which has that section at the back about ghosts. They definitely have expanded upon it. For me, I guess it's another one of the a lot more to keep track of now, because there's a whole bunch of new conditions that happen as a result of interacting with ghosts, whether it's like possessed, urged, or fettered, or all these other ones. And yeah, it looks cool, and but I don't necessarily know if I needed it.
I think because they need the default, and because of the setting, which we'll get into in a moment, of God Machine, they think that you might interact with ghosts as a default more than vampires or that, because you'll just buy that book.
Right.
And they have angels, which are pretty important in God Machine.
Well, we keep bringing it up, so why don't we get actually into the God Machine Chronicles setting, which, right, as we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, is actually the first half of the God Machine Chronicles book.
But won't be the last half of this episode.
Right.
It will probably be the last fifth.
Right.
Everybody's going, thank God.
Yeah. I can stop listening now. Oh.
Thanks for talking about all the stuff I can download for free.
Well, yeah. We've now told them what to look for.
And this is stuff that was alluded to in the beginning of the New World of Darkness book. And what they've just done is just fleshed it out. You know, there's a cool picture of astronauts in space.
Right.
Where astronauts, I suppose, would be.
Yeah, they could have been on the ground pre-launch.
Astronauts at home, not even in their...
not in their suits.
Hey, don't even know they're astronauts.
Exactly. Hey, that guy's an astronaut. How do you know? How do you know he's not?
Yeah, and I really appreciate God Machine explaining. Yes, they actually are astronauts. Those two guys in the bar. So what it's done is it's fleshed out some intriguing stuff from the beginning of the New World of Darkness book. And not to give too much away, but we've talked a lot about the rules and as relatively long time World of Darkness players, you can guess that's what really grabbed their attention. And the God Machine, I actually read that first, because I clicked the other PDF and just started reading from the beginning. I would say, what was the elevator pitch that we were talking about? Something like
I think you said it was like Cthulhu or X-Files, something along those lines.
Yeah, I think it said something like Call of Cthulhu meets X-Files. Chris said something like Call of Cthulhu.
Right.
And we also talked about a game called Delta Green.
Yes.
Which is sort of, Call of Cthulhu meets X-Files. So
with Special Forces.
Yeah, Special Forces, X-Files meets Call of Cthulhu. Okay, a lot of people meeting here. So I think what you can gather from that it would have been the default. People who have looked at the New World of Darkness book, it was probably the default you were already thinking of. Maybe it wasn't a God Machine, but it was the Men in Black or something like that. And what that's doing is giving you that setting.
Yeah. So the setting itself is a little bit difficult to talk about, and I think this is why we left it for the end. And well, the other big reason is we were more interested in the rules update, just because we liked the system, as you said. And part of the reason it's difficult to talk about is they have intentionally left things vague. What exactly the God Machine is not stated.
The first two rules are you don't talk about the God Machine.
Right. And you also make soap. But on the one hand, that's really not clever, but I see why they did that, and they state why they did it, is because that allows, play groups to leave this in or take it out. And for future chronicle books, either the Strix Chronicles with Vampire or whatever the werewolf book is named, it allows them to either define or completely ignore this God Machine. So I understand why they did it. A part of me kind of says, I wanted a couple answers. And you've provided some cool options and possibilities. Kind of wanted to see something a bit more concrete.
I agree. I love what they do with the fiction, and World of Darkness books definitely committed to including a lot of fiction in their books, and be it in email form, story form, post-it note form, and in one clan book. But they don't always do it well, and I think they do it well in this game, and probably because, as Wayne said, it's so mysterious and we're not going to tell you everything, we're just going to hint at it, that they can do that, and because they're really promoting the mystery, you're not looking for answers. I think that might get frustrating if subsequent books keep going with, hey, we're not going to give you any answers, but here are more story
possibilities.
Seeds. And they do provide excellent seeds. like little paragraphs, little tidbits where you go, that's cool. I can see myself really working from that. And I'm of two minds because on the one hand, I think they do a really good job of setting it up. The art is fantastic. The art, in contrast to it, another game we reviewed, Numenera, the art and the text complement each other.
Right.
They're both... Sometimes the text will actually be about a particular story, and it's in the same tone, the perfect tone. So it's great. On the other hand, do I need somebody to tell me how to do X-Files meet Call of Cthulhu? But they do provide like some sample characters in the back, and they do like cults become pretty important, so they have a sample cult. Although the update I think also provides that as well. So,
well, as you said, they do provide a lot of story seeds and ways, things that'll spark creative ideas in the person reading it, which I do really like. And one of the things that they did that I really liked was they provided 20 almost one-shot scenarios.
Mm. Yes.
So one of the things they introduce is tiers.
Or reintroduce from Hunter.
Yeah, reintroduce, exactly. And the four tiers are local, regional, global, and cosmic. And they're kind of power level in a sense, mm-hmm. but not scope or scale. I mean, something that happens at the regional level could be really deep and involved. It's just going to be contained in a rather small geographic location, you know, where cosmic is going to be this giant world-spanning, possibly time-spanning event. And I think that's something decent to bring back, because it right at the beginning of the game, when you're kind of setting up, you can say, okay, what tier do we want to play at? Do we want to play a small local game like the vampire game we played with you, Lyle? I that would probably be a local tier because it was focused pretty much on Detroit and the surrounding area. I see that as another really good tool to help focus groups tell a specific kind of story.
And I think this does make a good case of fleshing out this God Machine Chronicle and introducing this setting with the rulebook, in that it allows you to refer to something that is pretty accessible, to like have a setting to constantly refer to when describing these tiers. Sometimes when you get a generic system and they're like, for example, and if you don't have anything to really hang on to, you start to get bored. It just becomes an extended rule book. Whereas here, it kind of feels like they're introducing the story. Of course, God Machine lends itself very well to a multi-tiered system.
Oh, it does, yeah.
Yeah, or a multi-tiered setting.
Yeah, and how they do that in the section, actually chapter 2, called Tales of the God Machine, what they do is they have 20 tales, mm-hmm. 5 for each of the 4 different tiers. So you have, you know, 5 local, 5 regional, 5 global, and 5 cosmic. And these tales can be used as one-shots or as springboards for campaigns of your own creation. But they also do something that I had never seen before, where they set up these things called tracks. And they say, here are 5 of these scenarios you can kind of play in order. And it kind of tells something of a story, and they're grouped by theme, and I had never seen that before, and I think that's pretty cool. It's like a modular adventure module, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, you know? I've seen it done before, but not with multiple tracks. What they call them, Chronicle tracks, I haven't seen them. So that was good. Yeah, I think that's really good. And something like this, when you are going to be very coy about what the answers are for the God Machine, like it could be this, it could be that. The God Machine could be this nuclear doomsday device that the Soviets made, and it, you know, became
sentient, or it could
alive. So do that, or it could be it could be this part of this alien spaceship,
right? Manifestation of the internet or something.
Yeah, so. It's nice to have these, because then a storyteller can see how to structure these tracks or these stories, how to run them, what kind of characters, how the players are going to interact with these different characters, what kind of characters to introduce. So I think that's really important in a game like this, when you think it's a bit out there. And another game that did a rule book that did a very good job of this is the Call of Cthulhu core book, where it has very good stories in the back, or adventures in the back, to the players can go through, and people say there's some of the best adventures they've ever played, but it's also fantastic because it introduces the people to this is the kind of game you're going to play. Now, you may not always play these adventures, but you're going to play something like this. And I think I think this is excellent for the for this book. And for people who are, I wouldn't recommend relatively new players to play the God Machine Chronicle, but for people who are not familiar with structuring a multi-tailed story, then that's a really good example of how to do it and how to go in from one to the other.
Right. I really liked that. I thought that was really cool. And I could see other systems doing the same thing and, you know, kind of here are these one-shots that you can play as one-shots, or here's how you can string them together and it kind of tells a story, or at least some kind of, you know, escalation and then fall.
Yep. So that is really good. And that's a real positive. So it does have that. So you have a lot to work with. So in a book of 250 pages, you get a lot of rules, and then you get several adventures in which to go from.
I forgot to mention that there's a section of NPCs or organizations, some of which, or possibly all of which, are featured in those tales and tracks. So you're provided sort of stats and bios of the NPCs that your characters may encounter, or you could just, you know, lift them directly from the book and use them in something you create yourself. So I think the beginning part of this book, the God Machine Chronicle, has a lot of utility. And as you said, I think they had to do that given the nature of what the God Machine is, because if it was just a book of, you know, we're not telling you because we don't know kind of answers, I would probably not have liked this book all that much.
Yeah, absolutely. Without the stories included, then I think this would seem really light. And I think with World of Darkness books, they love, you know, they love the stories, they love the fluff, and that's fantastic. They're great books to read. Sometimes it can be difficult to know what to do with if you get like, okay, here's a city. Okay, what do I do with this city? Give me a bunch of characters.
Right.
And these are definitely the types of books that do need that starting adventure or sample adventure in them. And God Machine not only gives you one, it gives you several.
Right.
And there's a nice variety to the types of characters that are in there. Like there's I don't want to ruin it, but like a sentient machine, and there's an example angel, and which is great because you hear about angels, like, oh, what does that mean? So here are some examples of, and here are how they're going to be used in the story.
Right.
So that's good.
Yeah, I could actually see just like not necessarily having to play God Machine Chronicles, but just looking through those scenarios and stringing them together and building a plot for a different game with them or different system.
Right.
I mean, I do like World of Darkness, so I probably use World of Darkness, but, you know.
Yeah. So to sum up, what did you think, Wayne? Do you recommend or not recommend a God Machine Chronicle?
Well, I recommend the first half of the book, the actual God Machine Chronicles, because it does do a lot of nice stuff, as we said. Honestly, I don't know about the rules update, which makes up about half of the book. And I think it's a knee-jerk reaction for me, coming from New World of Darkness, which didn't seem broken or wrong or like a bad system at all. While there are elements of the rules update that I like, and while it was put together well and really integrated, I don't necessarily think I need it.
Okay.
I'm neutral. If someone was going to start with this, at not having been introduced to the World of Darkness, I don't really think it would be that much more difficult to learn. I guess there is a slight incentive to learn these rules, because I'm sure all the new stuff for Vampire, Werewolf, whatever, is going to use the rules update, so you might as well learn them.
Yep. I think I'll recommend this book. Some things to consider. The PDF is available for free, as we said, of the update. If you want to get a printed book, it will come, as far as I know, packaged with the God Machine Chronicle. But if you listen to Wayne, and you know he would actually prefer that over the update, then that doesn't sound like it'd be a problem. I think I will get the book, so I will end up getting the update. I don't think the New World of Darkness needed to be replaced, but I'm fine with the rules that they did. And I'm fine with the update. I could see you playing both and having two games. It might get a little bit confusing because they're so similar.
Right.
But if you decided, well, I'm just going to play Requiem and go with that, then do that. But if you're really interested in Blood and Smoke as Wayne, which is the new vampire, then I think the update is pretty good. I am going to recommend this. If you are a fan of World of Darkness and you made the transition to New World of Darkness, then I think this transition would be fine. You may not switch to always play these rules, but I think they're nice to have. And I think they're easy to drop in. Like, if you really like the social maneuvering, I mean, it actually comes from Danse Macabre, which was a New World of Darkness book, so it's pretty easy to integrate.
Yeah.
I think that's a long way of saying, yeah, I'll get this book. And you should, too, if you like World of Darkness.
Yeah. I think they're like, oh, please just stop talking. I'll get it already. All right, so thanks again for joining us on Idle Red Hands. You can check us out at www.idleredhands.com. That's idleredhands.com. You can listen to us right there on the website. You can stream us through Stitcher. You can download us on iTunes or DriveThruRPG. You can like us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. You can join our G+ community or our forums, who are hosted by Happy Jacks. Or you can send us an email at info@idleredhands.com, because we always love hearing from all of you. So, thanks again, and see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
What is Beat Topics? Gosh, I miss Chris for that, because he does a good golem.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
I only do an unintentionally good golem when I'm saying words like colors, apparently.
Yeah. My impression was so bad. People were like, oh, he was doing golem. Oh.
I didn't realize it either.
Yeah, Doors, as it relates to this, of course.
Right, not the musical group. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking of an actual Door. That would have been my go-to.
Oh, all right. Yeah. All right. Yeah. And I'm sure the doors in the social maneuvering in World of Darkness update open rather than slide, like here in Japan.
Right, and I'm sure they're not like Jim Morrison or three other doors.
Oh, that was a perfect time for your beatnik snapping there. Never mind. All right.
Okay. Oh, my Jim Morrison?
My bad joke.
Anyway. Oh, your slide?
Yeah.
Sometimes you make jokes and I don't even know the jokes.
Yeah,
they're that good.
No, or that bad, yeah. But thank you for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. You can check... I completely forget what Chris says.
Dear
Holy crap.
God, 3 hours.
I know.
And for those who are thinking, dear God, this is a long episode. Wow, this is... Imagine what it was before we cut it.
Yeah. What does Chris say?
So,
Just thank you very much for joining us on Idle Red Hands. You can check us out on the
something
website.
Something friendly. Yeah. And then check us out on idleredhands.com.
Yeah.
I-D-L-E.
I guess I'll do it.
E-D. H.
Yeah, you and your spelling. I'll do it. Don't worry.
I'm actually a great speller.
You can't say it. So thanks again for joining us on Idle Red Hands. You can check us out on our website at www.idle. I did it wrong.
You're so fast. Okay.
Drive Through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive Through RPG. The one true source for RPGs.
Yeah.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.